recorded live from Orlando, Florida and Nashville, Tennessee. You're listening to The Dapper Danielle Show, starring Ian Wilson, Clarence Kelly. And now, here's your host, the one and only, The Dapper Danielle.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dapper Danielle Show. I'm the Dapper Danielle. I'm joined, of course, by my brothers, Ian Wilson and Clarence Kelly. Hello, and welcome to the show. We've had quite an eventful weekend here. Well, two of us have. The other one was at a wedding.
I had an eventful weekend.
You did have an eventful weekend.
It's not eventful with y'all.
That's true.
We had a theme park eventful weekend. Clarence had a real life eventful weekend.
Yeah, I went to a wedding reception. In North Carolina.
That's good. I mean, you got to hang out, but we were texting back and forth and we were telling you some of our RVing woes and how that went. But honestly, the RV was a lot of fun. We were able to partner up with Nashville RV here locally and a private owned RV dealership and rental service. And they let us rent out this big old rig that fit all of us. But the sleeping arrangements we had planned, thank goodness you didn't come along, Clarence, because we ended up realizing that where Ian and Jacqueline were supposed to sleep, the weight limit...
There was a weight issue.
It wouldn't have been exceeded.
Putting on my dad bod, you know, here post-baby. And so there was a little bit of a weight issue with us combined on the top bunk. And it was smaller, I think. Some of the RVs have the queen size kind of like bunks that come down. This one was like a little bit smaller than that. So I think it just wasn't designed for two adults to sleep.
Well, and then there was that gap right there. And then Jacqueline's like, I can't sleep up here. I'm going to fall. So we ended up making it work. And where you would have been sleeping is where Jacqueline ended up sleeping.
Should we also do why y'all were in an RV?
Should we also do the official intro for the show too?
She did. She said, welcome to the Dapper Danielle Show.
Oh, she did?
Yeah. Okay. Right?
Did you? Yeah, no, I did. Okay. I did. I opened it right up with that.
Welcome to the Dapper Danielle Show.
Hey, Ian, welcome to the Dapper Danielle Show.
We're still drinking the first cup of coffee. It's all good.
Okay, so yeah, let's give some context for why we were all in a Dapper family RV trip and why Clarence obviously was there at a wedding, so he was not with us, but the rest of us, Dapper RV trip, continue.
Yes, so here... Actually, this past weekend, we had the opportunity to go visit Dollywood. So I reached out to their social media team a couple of months ago and I said, hey, I would love to come visit. What is the, what do we have to do? Is there something that can be offered? Do you have media packages? What's the dealio? And basically they said, hey, we would love for you to come. So I had to go through the process of submitting my socials, all my online stuff. And they said, we would love for you to come. We will go ahead and comp you one day tickets. And we were also given a premier pass. Well, not premier pass. It's like their version of fast pass, premier pass.
Time saver
is what they called theirs.
Yes.
And we also were gifted the tasting pass, which was really fun. I did not realize that is something that they do. And it's something that they've started here recently. It's similar to like a food and wine experience over at Epcot, but it's the tasting pass element of what they do over at California Adventure, where you get a little card and you can pick out what you want. So they gifted that to us. Basically a fast pass for food.
I like that.
And so we scheduled it all out back and forth with their team, figuring out when would be the best weekend to come. And it just happened to be this weekend. And I had always wanted to go to Dollywood. Y'all, you don't know it, but I'm a really, really big fan of Dolly. I did not grow up on Dolly, but I did rediscover her music later on in life in 2020 when we were in shutdown. I went through her whole discography and really fell in love with Dolly Parton.
If you're a real fan, name three Dolly songs.
Wait, what? Oh.
Name three Dolly songs. Real fan, you're wearing the merch.
Well, Jolene, 9 to 5. Why'd you come in here looking like that? Dumb blonde, okay. Backwoods Barbie.
I only asked for three. I only asked for
you made me prove it.
Real fan.
I am very much a real fan.
We did throw a Dolly Parton themed birthday party for Danielle 1 year too, right? In the midst of her love of Dolly kind of being rekindled when she was getting into it on her long drives over to Orlando. And I just remember she was sleeping in that day, as you should do on your birthday. Mm-hmm. And we decided it was time for her to celebrate her birthday. So we just started blasting 9 to 5, I think, as loud as we could in the apartment complex.
Because
to get her up and going for her birthday celebration.
They surprised me by decorating the whole living room and like this big Dolly Parton balloon arch and everything. Yeah. You guys had all the items from Walmart because Dolly, of course, partners with Walmart. And she had her whole party collection there. And you guys got everything. And I was obsessed. And it's probably still one of my favorite birthday photos that I've ever taken was with that setup that you guys created. But yes, that was a good birthday.
So Danielle's a big fan. And it made sense for us to go to Dollywood eventually.
So I wanted to go to Dollywood mostly for Dolly. And then I was like, you know what? I got to bring the rest of the family along because why not? I mean, it makes for great content and a great outing.
We live here in Tennessee too. You know, we're the real Tennessee.
You have no excuse. Yeah. Yes. And we end up going, and so we really went in with no expectation is
and
truly what happened.
Very limited knowledge. Like for,
yes,
you know, because I feel like this episode, we're just going to talk about, you know, our experience in mm-hmm. Dollywood, kind of comparing it to Disney World. I think especially in light of, I'm sure all of you have seen the recent TripAdvisor that's kind of, you know, rankings that's kind of gotten spread across a bunch of news articles saying Dollywood's the number one theme park in America. So yes. I feel like this episode is going to be kind of talking about, okay, should, in our opinion, Dollywood be the number one theme park in America? How does it compare to our, you know, kind of our wheelhouse of Disney World, mm-hmm. Disneyland type stuff. So really we had no expectations going into Dollywood for what Dollywood would be like. But I would also say we had limited knowledge. I mean, Jacqueline and I had done like no research onto what type of rides there were, you know, if there were things for Georgiana.
Jack, her mom, like, did more research than anybody did.
Yeah.
And even I did not have time beforehand to really do proper research to say, hey, these are the rides, this is where it's at, blah, blah, blah. And I also, maybe I also realized it wasn't as easily accessible to find this information as it would be for Disney World, because there are so many Disney World influencers. There's so many of us all over the place. You can search that information and it'll pop up. But Dollywood, it was a little more tooth and nail to figure out how it operated. Other than the Dollywood website. And I mean, it was okay. It operates like any other theme park website, but I do feel like there was those main questions we were missing. Mm-hmm. Like where do strollers get parked? Where do you pick up certain pass information?
All of the like attractions too. I felt like this was tough too. It's like for someone who didn't have any knowledge of Dollywood rides, it was like, okay, when you're reading about them on the app and stuff, it was like, okay, yeah, there's just a description of the like theming of the ride, but no description of the actual ride itself. So it's hard to just, okay, like Lightning Rod, which is like, has like some of the most like airtime, which is just like the drop sensation basically of any coaster in America. It has just like a description of like, yeah, you're in like an old hot rod and you're blasting through the mountain roads. And then it's like Big Bear Mountain, which is kind of more like Thunder Mountain and Slinky Dog combined, just has a description of like, you're on a chase for Big Bear Mountain and stuff. So it's like, you don't really have a context for like ranking. Okay, so one of them, if you're Danielle.
What's the thrill level?
Yeah, if you're a Danielle and you're just reading these, like, well, which one should I get on? And like not, you know, super conscious of which ones are have the big drops and which queue you're getting into. You could get into a ride that is way more thrilling, I feel like, than maybe what you're interested in. And you just don't have a way, I guess, really to categorize like, okay, which ones of these are the extreme? Or like, we're just jumping way ahead, I feel like. But like Blazing Fury, like one of the only dark ride I think that Dollywood really has.
And one of the oldest.
Is rated as a thrill ride. Right up there with Eagle's Flight, the big braking technology, you know, one where your feet are dangling over and you're doing loop-de-loops. Mm-hmm. They're both categorized as thrill rides. But Blazing Fury is no more intense than Pirates of the Caribbean at Disney World. Whereas the Eagle's Flight one is like, you know, top thrilling coaster in America. You know what I mean? So it's just like weird because it's like, okay, both of these are in the same category. That doesn't really make sense to me or help me decide as I'm making my attraction choices the other day. So I feel like just going along with this whole like limited information theme, we all kind of were, I think we got into the park without a ton of foreknowledge mm-hmm. of the park. And then we're kind of just getting our bearings for the first couple of hours of like, okay, so what are the shows? Where do you kind of go for the shows? You know, what are the attractions?
But is that,
what
does
do we kind of need to do here?
Does that fall on Dollywood's responsibility, or is that really are there not enough influencers for Dollywood to really touch on these subjects and cover these main questions that the average guest would have? And it's not really, I mean, it's not really their responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, but would that help Dollywood in the long run to really focus on those questions and answer those questions? The content might not be good, but it does help in SEO, so search engine history, to be able to find that information if it's categorized correctly.
Totally.
So interesting topics, but
who needs influencers at all when you have the world's biggest influencer owning the park?
Accurate.
Like,
but Dolly has not stepped foot on half of those question. Coasters.
I know. I had when they're like talking about like, yeah, you know, like Eagle's Flight is like this one where you have everybody hangs out over the edge and then the tracks in the middle. So there's nothing below you. You're doing these big loop-de-loops and stuff. And I'm like, you know, there's all this like press from like, you know, news articles you can find with like when it opened of like, you know, Dolly helping open it up and stuff. And I'm like, so did Dolly at like age 80 probably when this ride opened, do you think she strapped into that and was absolutely ready to go? I mean, like, I don't know. I just don't really picture Dolly.
So. I hope so. That'd be an amazing video. I would watch that. That'd be really funny.
She would have to have like on a bandana just to hold down the wig. Just
The Dapper Danielle Show will be right back after these messages.
Okay, so we have no major news we want to cover because we do have a couple of things we want to go ahead and jump into. I have some fun history things about Pigeon Forge that I do want to touch on with you guys because I don't think this is history that any of y'all would know. Also, no major reviews to be able to note, but we have gotten some lovely comments of you guys appreciating and liking the episodes and some of our topics that we've been talking about, so thank you so much for that. And we do have a newer member for the refresher level, which is going to be Sarah. Thank you so much, Sarah, for joining the refresher level of the Dapper Danielle Patreon. And we do have a couple of new people that have joined also in the premium bar and churros tier. So thank you so much. Y'all, you ready to jump into some history about Pigeon Forge?
Let's do it. Show me.
Where
do they make?
That is a very good question and actually really ties into my history that I have for here. So, fun fact, Pigeon Forge gets its name from pigeons. Actually does. Lovely. Yes. So, Pigeon Forge was kind of became an area or a town in about 1810, right? So, the 1800s. And the reasoning why was because, well, there's two different portions of the name. The pigeon portion of it was because of the passenger pigeon. And there were so many of them that would fly in and out of the valley that it would darken the sky. And that's what they were known for.
Okay.
Okay, so Dapper Mom's off camera right now. She's like, what are you talking about?
No, she's saying, where are they now?
They're extinct. Oh. So the passenger pigeon was over-hunted and their little breeding grounds that they would nest in were destroyed by man in less than 100 years. And it is the first documented species to be put extinct by man by 1914.
Wow.
So they were overrunning the mountains of Tennessee and in the northern states in the middle south for hundreds of years, so much so that this passenger pigeon specifically had more of the pinkish tummy. So when you see those Victorian images and it was these pigeons with this like pinkish tummy, that's the specific bird that they're talking about.
So were they like an invasive species? Like were they introduced? That just seems like a crazy amount of pigeon.
No, they lived here first before anybody else. Wow. I assume one of the main reasons why they went extinct was because most pigeons, they mate for life. So if you have these birds that they mate with one other bird and you kill off its mate, they won't keep reproducing. It's within 100 years, less than 100 years, it was the entire population, over 5 million of them were killed off.
Wow.
Yeah, which is crazy. The second portion of the name actually comes from a large forge, iron forge, that was owned by Isaac Love and was like really at the height and one of the main only things in this area in 1810. Isaac later would actually sell the forge, and I think he moved to Kentucky in 1840, and then the whole area, the forge was actually removed. One thing remained of this giant hammer, and it's been passed around to different locations. I think it's still in one location from the 1800s still. I want to say it's in their city council area.
I was going to say in Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Honestly, I would not be surprised. And really, it did not become a vacation destination until the 50s. And this was more like for camping. And one of the first motels, the Norma Dan Motel, which is still in operation today, opened in 1958.
Okay.
But the first train transportation, automobile transportation did not arrive until 1930s, mm-hmm. which is kind of already like 30 years behind, really, by the time the first automobiles came around, right? Yeah.
I guess 19... I don't know when was
1910
invented. 1910,
I think so.
Be 20 years behind.
20 years behind, and then the first paved road. It became more of a tourist destination because of the highways that were paved in the 50s as well. So that's where it became more easily accessible.
Thanks, Eisenhower.
Yeah. And one thing I love is that. I don't know what it is about Pigeon Forge, but before Silver Dollar City and before Dollywood, there was an attraction featuring the island of Hawaii.
Oh.
Yes. This was so.
When I think about Pigeon Forge, I do think Hawaii.
It was called the island.
It's actually a very common greeting here in Middle Tennessee is to say aloha.
Aloha. Right?
Instead of hello.
You know, aloha. That's how we say it here aloha. In southern Hawaii.
Aloha.
They say aloha. We say aloha, y'all.
Aloha, y'all.
And this attraction operated from...
We got this here ohana and stuff. Ohana means the family that's coming together to go to Pigeon Forge.
Literally, yes.
Ohana is meeting up in Pigeon Forge.
But that's not the crazy part of this, right? So the island attraction operated from 1972 to 1984. And it was only open seasonally, so during the peak seasons, and then it closed for the winter, just like Dollywood does, basically. And during the summer season, they flew porpoises, dolphins, from the Memphis Aquarium area, where they would winter, basically,
okay,
to Pigeon Forge.
Uh-huh.
And they partnered with the state of Hawaii. With Hawaii. They partnered with Hawaii students and flew in all of their cultural representatives that were Hawaiians. And they did this for years. So they had a hula show that welcomed you upon entering. They had multiple porpoises. They kept calling on porpoises. So I don't even know if they were dolphins. But they were multiple porpoises.
Mm-hmm. Porpoise.
Yes. A bird show. They had a deer ranch and a live Hawaiian stage show. But the main stars, of course, were the porpoises. Overall, there were 20 different performances a day. And guests were allowed to pet them also.
The Hawaiians or the porpoises?
The porpoises. visitors were greeted at the main building with a warm hula dance comprised of male and female dancers in traditional Polynesian wear and with instruments. Hawaiian culture is known for their friendliness and hospitality, so maybe Porpoise Island was a perfect fit to the cordial nature of the Smokies and its people.
Oh, it was called Porpoise Island?
Porpoise Island, and it is now called the island. I had that mixed up. So
it's still around.
The land area is. There's no reference to Hawaii anymore. Okay. But this little island, basically, they do say it's in here.
Is it an actual island? Like, is it in water? What's kind of the... Because there's not a lot of lakes. I don't know if you knew this, but there's no ocean.
There's not. So it is so named because it is a natural land selection.
Halfway to the Pacific, I tell you.
Right.
Pigeon Forge.
Right.
right? It is a natural land section in the middle of Little Pigeon River, which runs parallel to Pigeon Forge Parkway. So it's like a little island cut out in the middle of the river.
This is, okay, this is super side note, but this is just like reminding me of, okay, our book that is coming, not yet, but it's coming about lost Disney
September of next year.
I do feel like we could do a just defunct roadside attraction talk show, because we just seem to stumble across these with Disney. Like, Disney is just so adjacent to so many different themes, right, entertainment throughout America, that I feel like we just stumble across things. Because, like, it's like, who knew that in Pigeon Forge, they were flying porpoises from Memphis to Pigeon Forge just to do a show? And at that time, I mean, Pigeon Forge was like not even close to the size it is today. And
no, this was one of the main attractions that so many people have memories of.
So I'm just saying, we could do some serious coverage of some of these, like, what once was the crazy themed entertainment things that have happened.
And there's some places that are still existing and still are around today, or they're like remnants of, and they've been re-owned and refurbished and everything. But I think it's also interesting, if you look at the dates of 1972, Disney World and the Polynesian Resort opened up in 71. And this is really tailing on the end portion of mainland America's fascination with Hawaiian and Polynesian culture in the 60s. And so this is kind of like that over, like, extending that out further into the 70s and 80s. So I just find it so fascinating, you know?
Thanks, World War II.
Yep. South Pacific, interesting.
You
know,
it's like you got all that happening at the same time. The island fascination.
So, but I mean, everything I've read about this, it said that, like, the porpoises were well cared for. They had their own veterinarian teams that actually would fly with them and would stay with them like 24 hours. The Hawaiian students that came and were here in Pigeon Forge, they interviewed one person in this article saying, like, how much she enjoyed it. And it was a fun time. And she was a high schooler. She came over during high school and performed and then went back to Hawaii. Hmm. So I think it's just very interesting, the whole thing.
So that's Pigeon Forge pre-Dolly. But where does Pigeon Forge pre-Dolly start launching things into the stratosphere for this little tiny Smokies town that really, I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to diss Pigeon Forge, but I feel like it's not really an icon on the map until Dolly starts kind of pumping some juice into that economy.
Well, surprisingly enough, the main portion, so it's actually had three different owners, technically. So the original Dollywood kind of has. So the original theme park opened up in 1961, and it was called Rebel Railroad. And it was a very, very small theme park. It was then later bought out and became Silver Dollar City in 1977.
Wow.
And that's where Blazing Fury came from, 1977, with Silver Dollar City. And when you look at the outside of the attraction, it actually says Silver Dollar Mining Co. on the top left side of the attraction. So that's a tie into that. And then in 1986, entertainer Dolly Parton became a co-owner, and the park was renamed Dollywood. Since then, the park has expanded significantly, adding new attractions and a water park in 2001. And now there's multiple hotels as well. Yeah. So Dolly kind of saved it, basically, because it wasn't, I think there was that lull of everything kind of disappeared in the 80s there. Just like how the Polynesian Island also, or the Porpoise Island also disappeared there in 1984. You see Dolly Parton came in right there in 86, right after that. So actually, what was happening in the world during that time in 84?
Well, even Disney, I was going to say, in like the early 80s, that's all Epcot starting, and Disney had a hard time.
Right.
Grand plans for Epcot, and then stuff started falling through just because of, I mean, the 80s would have been stuff happening in the Middle East, like, right, like that's like oil and gas crisis is kind of happening around then. So you just have a lot, and then you're like immediately post like Vietnam and Korea kind of as well too. So just a lot of like global unrest happening that then trickles into Cold War kind of dominating everything. It's trickling into then the investment ideas of, okay, are we really going to spend money on tourism basically when there's all this craziness happening, you know, inflation is running away, you know, similar language probably that as to what is happening, you know, with, or what people are talking about today's economy. Yeah. So anyway, so I just feel like thinking about just, okay, Disney World's development around that time, to me, it makes sense that there could have been a lot of things in these smaller tourist towns that were really on the ropes. Makes a good time for someone like Dolly to come in and say, okay, yeah, if you want to buy, it's a good investment at this time, but also you're able to really save, you know, a town like this.
And Dolly is such a philanthropist. Thank you. The word is not coming off my tongue properly.
That is amazing.
And, thanks again. Dolly, she's the creator of the Imagination Library, and she is one of the number one supporters of African American communities and all these different people's groups that she funds, and she donates all these things to. So I think she saw her home of the Smokies and in the middle of Tennessee and saw the opportunity, went ahead and was like, you know what, we're going to revitalize this, because if Silver Dollar City is not saved, if we don't go ahead and revitalize this whole vacation boom destination, then hundreds of thousands of jobs will be lost. Mm-hmm. And that there's nothing else out there in Pigeon Forge besides manufacturing work and, I mean,
coal mining.
Yeah,
that's it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think people forget that, like, Pigeon Forge and East Tennessee and the Smokies and everything is a very poor area.
Yeah.
It's very impoverished. I mean, that's like Sevierville, where Loretta Lynn is from. Like,
right.
She has songs about, I mean, her biggest hit is Coal Miner's Daughter, and it's literally about her upbringing and like living in an impoverished community and household and being the daughter of a coal miner.
Right.
I think even Dolly Parton's story growing up in East Tennessee, she grew up in a very poor household.
She did. Her dad was a sharecropper. He was also a pastor? He was a sharecropper. He did a little bit of mining work and a little bit of construction work. But he did whatever it was to be able to get by. They lived in a one bedroom log cabin with her and her 12 siblings. So big Parton family. And she went off and she made a name for herself after she graduated high school. And
I think too, like, music for a lot of these communities, especially rural communities, is your only form of entertainment.
Yes.
When you don't have TV, you don't have electricity, a lot of houses may not even have radio. Mm-hmm. But like, all you really have for entertainment for your household, for your community, is music. And so a lot of these families grew up just playing music together.
Right.
That's why you have such a deep, like, tradition in country music, especially here in the Smokies in Appalachia, of like these folk songs that are passed down generation by to generation.
Mm-hmm.
And you have these amazing country musicians that come out of it and make something of themselves and want to bring that back home to where they grew up, and bring the money to an impoverished community. And I mean, that's Dolly Parton. That's Dolly Williams.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And I don't think people have a grasp on time, right? And like, when this is happening. So we were talking about this on our way back home with Dapper Mom and Dad too, and about how most people still had dirt floors by this time period, depending on what area of America you lived in. Dolly Parton was born in 1946. So this was at the end of the middle 40s, or really her childhood. By the time she was five, we were in the 50s at that point. And she was still living in a log cabin in the middle of Tennessee. And to not have access to so many things, like, we take them all for granted right now. I think that's like, don't know. It's just kind of interesting to look at
sometimes
that.
Sometimes you watch the development of America.
And think like everybody's at that.
Your cultural touch points are in areas that were way more developed than like what Dolly would have been in the 50s. So
right.
I think just reflecting on that of like, okay, yeah, her coming back then in the 80s and the 90s and revitalizing an area would have been really significant and a huge jump in her mind for that area.
Yeah.
Even if for all of us, we're like, oh, well, okay, yeah, but like, the 50s, 60s to the 80s, like, yeah, I mean, sure, there's some inventions, but there's not that much that's changed. You know, if you're comparing it to like a Los Angeles or somewhere that's really developed where you're getting all of these mm-hmm. cultural kind of milestones coming out of it, it's like, yeah, but for some of these more rural areas, there were some big things that were missing just from everyday life happening, you know, from the 60s to the 80s to the 90s into the
right.
2000s even. So,
well, even Dapper Mom was talking about how, in Florida, their house didn't have air conditioning in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And Mom didn't get air conditioning until she married Dad and they moved into their first apartment together. So like just those little modern comforts that we take for granted, mm-hmm. you know? So I just found that so interesting right there.
The Dapper Danielle Show will be right back after these messages.
But yeah, so other things that really happened, I did find the date. Blazing Fury was created in Silver Dollar City in 1978, so a year after they took over the property. And the grist mill, where we got our cinnamon bread, was built in 1982. So when Dad went, it was still Silver Dollar City, but he remembered the grist mill. So maybe, well, that would have been right after it was probably built. Mm. And then Dolly came in and bought it in 1986. So he probably went in like 84 or 85.
Saying like 84, 85 is when
right before it became Dollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think is so funny. And you'll see those videos if you go to my other social media content, go to the Dapper Danielle TikTok, Instagram, or even here on Reels, or not Reels, what is it? Shorts on YouTube. And you can see the videos of getting the cinnamon bread and all that other content over there too.
What is our live audience trying to say?
In 2005, it was still a grist mill when we took you. There was no cinnamon bread.
An actual grist mill?
Oh, they were still serving it.
You could buy cornmeal.
That's maybe what really that's chill. What Daddy remembers.
They were selling cornmeal, but they were.
Hey, kids! Which one do you want? A bag of cornmeal or this cinnamon roll bread? Which one do you prefer?
I want cornmeal. I want that cornmeal.
So excited! We came to Dollywood and got a bag of cornmeal. I can't wait to take it. We've come a long way.
I mean, I do love me some cornbread. I'm not gonna lie, I do love that. Anyway,
cornbread I can fit into my hogs. It's the most versatile of products.
Where's this character coming from?
I don't know.
It's Cotton.
He belongs inside Blazing Fury.
Appalachian boy.
My son.
He has a pet pig. He's just visiting. He loves his cornmeal.
It's going to be a new animated character coming soon. You never know. Anyway, any other notes that you want to say about any of that before we jump into now our current experience in live time with Dollywood after hearing a little bit of history about Pigeon Forge and about Dollywood, just kind of the general timeline.
Where was Dolly born?
In
Locust Grove, right?
I feel like there is a perception that Dollywood, for people who don't know anything about the history of Dollywood and don't know anything about Dolly Parton, there's a perception that Dollywood is built next to Dolly Parton's hometown.
But it's not. There's a replica of her log cabin that's been installed in Dollywood, but she was born in Locust Grove, which is...
Pittman Center, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. How far is that from Dollywood?
It's a town in Sevier County, Tennessee.
So it
is pretty close, but the population in 2020 was only 454 people.
Yeah. Small town America.
Yeah. Small town America, yes.
She is from the area.
Literally
next
Pigeon
to
Forge necessarily.
No. Yeah. Maybe, like a county over, really, is what it is. On the other side of the hill, you know, over there. But yeah, I mean, it was still, it's still close. It's still considered the Smokies over there.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. Hold on, let me make sure I have everything else up here. Yes, okay. So the other thing we want to talk about is we went to Dollywood. We had a fun time for what we did experience over there. And I do think maybe this was a little bit on us that we weren't as prepared enough and not doing enough research. I also had content I wanted to grab. I really wanted to focus on the Dolly Parton experience, the new museum that was built over there as part of the Dollywood's 40th anniversary, which was just celebrated. And so there were certain things I wanted to get, but we do feel like we missed a good portion of the park. But a lot of it was roller coasters, and I don't do roller coasters, so I didn't really feel like I missed out on much. But we maybe did. But anyway, all this to say, here recently, Ian touched on it at the beginning of this episode, Dollywood was rated the best theme park in USA by TripAdvisor.
And top 10 worldwide, too. Into their, like, I can't, it was like 9 or 8 or something like that, whereas Magic Kingdom's down at 16 worldwide. And that was interesting because we went into Dollywood, I would say, just we went into Dollywood hearing that. And it was like, wow, okay, well, maybe Dollywood is like really good. Like maybe right? We're sleeping on it kind of and we need to go check it out. And I don't know. I feel like we left Dollywood and we were just kind of like, how is it number one? And I think even in like today, I was just before we jumped on here, right, just researching more like, okay, so how does TripAdvisor like calculate this? And they're like, well, how's we calculate the like the best of the best, like the rankings based on like the quantity and the quality of reviews. But it's really confusing to me because Disney Magic Kingdom has a like 4.4 with almost 70,000 reviews on TripAdvisor. Dollywood has a 4.3, so one percentage point lower, and only has like 20,000 reviews.
Now,
so
they have, do you wonder if it's by word count?
It could be by word count, which that's interesting. I know TripAdvisor likes you to write in-depth reviews, like some of the TripAdvisor reviews I've done. I do believe
TripAdvisor also considers the verbiage in its reviews if you're using words like stressful or difficult. It will categorize it as a worse experience than if you use positive words.
That would make sense. Another thing
that they seem to take into account in the rankings is the number of attractions, which I still see how Dollywood beats Disney, like Magic Kingdom, because I feel like Magic Kingdom has a ton of attractions for the footprint of the area.
Right.
But maybe they have some like, you know, square foot of park property compared to count of attractions or wait times, or it was just really confusing me. I feel like the TripAdvisor was not clear. And I feel like even reading the reviews, there's a lot of recent reviews on TripAdvisor saying, yeah, Dollywood was fine, but I don't see how it's number one in America. Or, yeah, we had an okay time at Dollywood, but we probably won't rush back, you know, and stuff. So
right,
it was just really, really interesting to me that was even a talking point. It felt like it kind of was this weird, you know, and maybe it's just all marketing schematics kind of, you know, where it's just whatever positioning. But I just felt like it was kind of this like, well, technically Dollywood is number one, but then when you look at the real like experiences and everyone's feelings, it's like, yeah, it's not number one really. Mm-hmm. Even over the next number three on TripAdvisor's is this other theme park that only has like 2,000 reviews. And I'm like, okay, so only 2,000 people have written about this on TripAdvisor, and you're going to rank it above like Epcot, which has, again, 70,000 or something. Like, it just doesn't check out to me as right, the best way of doing rankings for TripAdvisor. So I felt like that to me, I just felt like it was, TripAdvisor lost some credibility with their like rankings just because right, of it. But I think, okay, even just take TripAdvisor out of it. Let's not try to be like, who's number one? Did we enjoy Dollywood? Did we enjoy, you know, Disney World, Magic Kingdom, however you kind of want to chop it up? I feel like my like just 2-second summary of it is Dollywood to me, I feel like if your biggest priorities were like non-negotiable for me is I want to save as much money as possible. Every dollar matters. And I want to ride as many big time thrill coasters as possible in a single day, like not a 5-day trip, just one day. Dollywood maybe edges out Disney because it's got bigger coasters that you can get on in one day.
There's not one just spread out between the four parks.
Exactly. And it is cheaper for a day pass, cheaper for your like time saver pass compared to like Genie Plus. But marginally, I mean, I feel like if you're like spending an extra $30 or $40, you're right there at Disney World prices. The food, same price, like quick service prices, very comparable to Disney World. So I don't know. I felt like, to me, it was like very much like if you have that super strict criteria, maybe you will choose Dollywood over anything in Disney World.
Right.
But if you have any other criteria, Disney World is just going to beat Dollywood hands down. All of the parks, yeah. I think, you know?
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved it because of the Dolly itself, right? And my fandom of her. But if you don't know who Dolly is, or you're not a fan of her music or anything else like that, you might look at this and be like, this is kind of a hodgepodge theme park, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Or you would skip that entire section all about Dolly Parton and just go straight to the roller coasters in the back. And you're just looking at the thrill aspect of it. So I could see where people enjoy it because they just genuinely do not care about the theming. They're there for the moment and for the thrill action side of it. Where I'm looking at it from a immersive theme park perspective and seeing the storytelling and the artistry that goes into so much of this. I see that so much in Disney World, and I know how to find those stories and how to look at those stories. Maybe I wasn't able to focus in on those stories as easily or be able to find those connecting dots. Besides the fact that it's Smokies and bears and going fast through the mountains.
Yeah.
Woods.
Well,
that it is what it is, whether you don't have an IP heavy park.
Yeah.
Which is great also. But then was there not attention given to creating those characters and those storylines that you fall in love with in those attractions? Totally. You know? So like, all these attractions, even though they're original IPs, they don't have like a Figment in them, who was an original character created for that attraction. They don't have the Country Bears was an original IP also. It wasn't based off of a movie. It was an attraction first. I love those characters and I love their storytelling in those characters. There's none of those characters in these attractions.
Yeah. And I felt like we rode only three attractions because we were just doing a bunch of stuff the other day. But we rode Blazing Fury, and then Jacqueline and I rode Fire Chaser Express and Big Bear Mountain. So kind of some of the more middle, you know, family coasters, not really the big thrills, not really the little ones either. But I felt like just the storytelling in both of those coasters and the Blazing Fury especially too, very confusing. I mean, not a clear storyline of what is going on, what the purpose is. There's no theming. There's theming, but there's no storyline elements in the queue. So there's nothing kind of prepping you saying, okay, Fire Chaser Express, we need you to go out on a mission to look for fires in the Smokies. Like that's kind of on the app, but that's really the only place you hear it. And then there's a little speaker in the attraction that says some things like, get out of there, when there's like the fireworks are about to go off and the fire's starting on the firework building, you know, that someone left in the middle of the Smokies randomly. There's no story of like, okay, yeah, you're doing this, you get to this goal, you come back, great job, everybody. Or, you know, I don't know. I just feel like Disney does a better job of, even on the coasters where it's, you know, Big Thunder Mountain or something where there's, again, original IP, not a movie like that it's based on or any other outside story for you to draw influence from, you still kind of have an idea of what's going on. Okay, yeah, the mines are kind of flooding and you're going through you know kind of what to expect. And maybe it's just a story about you're driving through the mines on a runaway train and there's flooding and you get out of it. Okay, that's okay to not have this like, you know, the evil mine guy is trying to protect his riches and you're going to, you know, you don't have to have this complicated story. But I just felt like a lot of the coasters just seem to be very much like Eagle Coaster, you fly like an eagle. Butterfly Coaster, fly like a butterfly.
Sting like a bee.
Train Coaster, yeah. Train Coaster, drive like a train. You know, it's just very like, okay, yeah, but what's the story here? Kind of, you know, why is this here? What's the purpose of it? You know, so I don't know. That was just kind of my take.
What is going to be the story that I attach to? Not like there's the thrill aspect of it. That's right. But for somebody like me that doesn't do thrill coasters, I'll go through the queue of Tower of Terror and Rock and Roller Coaster because I love the theming. I love the story that's there in the queue, that's there in the pre-show. And but I had no reason to wait with you guys at all. So I skipped out and I waited outside entirely. I mean,
what
I got to wait with
the
baby.
The longest wait that you had to do for a ride?
Well, we had the Premiere Pass or the Time Saver. And I keep saying Premiere Pass. Wrong verbiage. We had the Time Saver. So Jacqueline and Ian were able to go and just scan. Actually, they waited in line and then they scanned. No. Well, that'll be in a bonus episode. We will, Ian and I will be nitpicking a couple of things of like, hey, these are some things that could be done better. So if you're part of the Patreon family, make sure you're signed up so that way you can listen to that episode too. And we'll get into all that nitty gritty stuff. So you guys only had to wait for maybe 20 minutes at most?
Well, we walked on to Fire Chaser Express. That was fast we literally scanned our thing, got right on. Then Big Bear Mountain, we probably waited 20 or 25 minutes in the Fast Pass or the Time Saver Pass lane. And then Blazing Fury did not have a Time Saver line. No. We probably waited another 25, 30 minutes for that one at least. But I saw the regular queue wait times, which weren't listed on the app. And it didn't have anything like when you got to the ride either, but they had these random TVs kind of spread around that would show some.
Yeah, you didn't know before. There was nothing at the entrance of the attraction. It was just these random TVs in between attractions that listed them.
Yeah.
And so you're just walking in blind and hoping that you don't have to wait for more than an hour.
I saw a couple of the bigger ones were above 60 for sure, 70, 80. None of them were quite as crazy as some of the big ones at Disney of 120. I didn't see anything triple digit, but I definitely saw some high double digit wait times for some of the bigger ones. Didn't have Time Saver, you easily could have been waiting an hour or an hour and a half for some of the bigger attractions.
And some of that was because of their loading process. The efficiency key was not there. And again, that's going to be in the bonus episode. And if you're a Disney person or an ex-Disney cast member, you know the five keys basics. So efficiency was not a key. there were some things that were like, okay, we could see that it was good, but how can we make it a better and best, right? So good, better, best. So it was a good experience overall. We had the food was pretty good for everything that we had during the tasting pass. It was pretty good. I'm a sucker for a potato. We had some great potatoes. But you also noticed that the standard theme park food wasn't there while we were there. Like you expect to go into Disney World and you have chicken nuggets and you have burgers and all this other stuff. Surprisingly, not a lot of burgers.
A lot of burgers. I felt like, I don't know, to me, I think, and maybe this is just the general kind of complaint about Dollywood in general was it just felt like you're in a weird version of Frontierland the whole day. Like that is it. It's like the food is all Frontierland food. The rides are all Frontierland rides and all the attractions are Frontierland stuff. So it's like just having a,
except for the random 50s corner over there.
Yeah, exactly. The jukebox junction or whatever.
Which is only for one attraction, the diner section. And then there's a theater over there. We honestly didn't venture into it because I was looking at it. I'm like, this isn't really great representation of the 50s or an idealized version of the 50s. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like Hollywood Studios where you go in and you're like, I feel like I'm immersed in 1930s, 1940s Hollywood. It was kind of missing some of those elements and there was nothing drawing me into that area at all. Exactly. So we skipped out on most of it. We kept passing by it right there. And we were on the corner of it, but we never ventured further into it.
So maybe if Thunder Mesa had been added to Frontierland, it would have been more analogous to Dollywood, you know, if this expanded.
Honestly.
Kind of like Frontierland thing. But that's just, I think that was my biggest complaint was it just felt like there was not a lot of variety in a way, which again, I understand I'm coming from Disney World. Disney World has the future, the past, the present. Pirates,
World of Fantasy,
everything all in one. You can have so much of an experience just in one day. So it's not a super big knock, but I just felt like that was I feel like all the areas feel kind of the same. All the food feels kind of the same. to me, it just wasn't, it felt like I was kind of doing the same thing in different versions of it all throughout the day instead of doing like really unique this, really unique that.
Well, kind of. Or like, why did we not see more mountain lore? Right? So there's so many great cryptics and all these other great like old American mythology and like
Rip Van Winkle-esque.
Oh, anything. Things. Yes. Yeah. Or even like the what's another good one from up here in the Tennessee area and in the mountain area?
Like
the
like
minor lore. Like the what are they called? Tommyknockers.
Like
Tommyknockers.
Just
oh, you're talking like actual like folklore.
Like folklore cryptids, characters. Like creatures, yes.
Monsters.
Like why
would Dolly include that in her park?
Because that's a great thing to try to escape from in a roller coaster. You're okay. Not just running through the forest or you're running away from a bear or whatever. Like, give me a Yeti to be afraid of, like on the Matterhorn. Like, give me some kind of creature of the Smokies that is like legend of is roaming the hills up here. So something to like,
I think
add to in the storylines.
Something about,
I'm seeing the merch possibilities, people.
Something you encounter in Appalachia,
yes,
and in the culture of the Smoky Mountains. Is that the things that are like that, you don't talk about them.
That's true.
If you're from here. Like, you aren't really
okay,
talking about it. And you're not playing with it. You're not making a game of it. You're not making entertainment
because it is, of it. It is very because real. Because
for a lot of these people, yeah, for a lot of people growing up, it's like, it could be a real danger. Well, granted, a lot of the things that, like, are Appalachia lore that are like when if it like the stuff that's like if it sounds far away it's close and if it sounds close it's upon you, it's like that could be a cryptid or it could be a mountain lion, like most of it's just actual real stuff that is like real things you would use as like practical safety measures living in the mountains.
That's true.
But if you apply the like the cryptid folklore side of it, it's like a lot of that's just not spoken. And especially if you're from the area, I think a lot of people that are really interested in that, I think there's a lot of people that are interested in it that are from Appalachia, but aren't necessarily living in Appalachia.
Right. They're living in Nashville.
And I think too, just thinking about Dolly too, it seems like her whole focus is very like, I want to create this positive escape homage to the Smokies, kind of
the beautiful side of the Smokies.
Exactly. And she just doesn't seem like anything is really focused on the scary, the spooky, the, you know, it's all just kind of this like, well, everything's really happy here type mentality. So
that's what I said before. Why would she include that in her part?
Yeah, that's true.
let me tell you what Dolly, if you're listening, you got the Haunted Mansion right now in Blazing Fury, okay? Those animatronics are scary. I mean, literally worse than the Haunted Mansion, as far as like the little, you know, the little things that pop up in the graveyard scene
with like the heads on the sticks.
That's just like the wife and the husband sitting in a little log cabin rocking. They look exactly like that, like this sunken in greenish yellowy haggard face. All the proportions are wrong. It's like the head is huge, the neck is short, but the long arm is really long. Odd. Easily the weirdest attraction I have ever ridden in my life. And so, it's all about a town being on fire. You're like, the premise of the thing is there's a town on fire and you're the firefighter just kind of
moseying through the town.
Moseying through the town, checking everything out.
Yep, oh, it's a blaze. I guess we'll keep on moving.
By the way, it's a zombie town of cryptids kind of living together. Like, that is, it was weird. The attraction. It was. I mean, don't think a Dollywood executive has set foot on that ride in the last 20 years.
Supposedly just went through refurbishment.
Well, they missed a lot. Let me tell you what. I mean, they missed a lot to refurb on that ride. It was shocking how I would have expected that if it was a random attraction in downtown Pigeon Forge that's been around since like
the 70s.
No one's touched it. It's just running. We're making money off it. No big deal. Mm-hmm. But to be in Dollywood.
Technically.
No, but I'm saying 78. To be in Dollywood where it's
to be in the number one theme park in America.
You can't have like melted vinyl animatronic faces that have not been repainted in
Y'all, latex does melt over time.
I mean, and it was just, it was
think
rough.
You could make a similar argument, though, for some of the rides in Disneyland.
Clarence, I am telling you, I'm telling you that whatever you think about Disney World being broken down, old, needing to be repainted and fixed up, Blazing Fury is like levels below that. Like levels below that. I mean, I am not kidding when I'm like, yes, I've ridden Disney rides and been like, wow, that's rough. It's not obviously
like, oh, Ariel's face isn't moving anymore.
Like this, obviously, you know? That one, you know, Pirates, that animatronic's looking a little rough in the corner, whatever stuff. This one,
Figment's
was,
jaw not working, nothing in comparison.
I mean, grotesque is the word that comes to mind to describe the animatronics. I mean, horrifyingly grotesque, the animatronics. I'm not exaggerating when I say that this ride was terrifying. I mean,
Fairground Funhouse.
Yes.
From
yes.
the 1950s.
Literally. Yes.
Paper mache head.
Yes.
Yeah, Dapper Mom just said traveling fairground from the 1950s, paper mache heads, like aesthetic.
If you branded it as like, if you rebranded everything from fire to circus and was like, see, like had all that really horrible like language of like, see this grotesque person, you know, in like the circus, whatever, I would have been like, yeah, checks out. Like this makes sense.
On theme, bravo, you did a great job. You accomplished the thing.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I know it sounds like I know what you're imagining. You're imagining the little rocking people in Disneyland Pirates kind of out front in the little
the old man right there on his little pipe.
No. No, 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 no. It is way worse than that. Okay. So anyways, Blazing Fury was rough.
Well, and a little extra fun lore to that is Blazing Fury is the reason why I do not do coasters and is what really stemmed my trauma from that from years ago. And we realized that. So we went into Dollywood in 2005 and Dad had fond memories of Blazing Fury from previous trips. And he's like, you know what? You're all big enough. Let's go ahead and go. And because it is a dark ride, the thrill aspect of it is not a lot. However, I was also the kid that I didn't like Haunted Mansion because there was too many dead people. It was too scary. So then to go into Blazing Fury and see these horrifying animatronics, this town that's on fire, and it starts off as a dark ride, and then suddenly you dip. And you do this turn and you have this mini coaster experience towards the end of the attraction. I didn't know what I was getting into. So we get off the attraction and I am horrified. I cry. We had to get me ice cream afterwards because I was traumatized and I was not prepared for it. It's kind of like when mom took us on to Dinosaur over on Animal Kingdom and she thought it was going to be like Universal Energy that had dinosaurs and it was a slow moving ride. And then we became traumatized after that. Really, it's just our parents throwing us into things that we were not prepared for. Or they just said, oh, yeah, it's just like this attraction. It's just like the Haunted Mansion. Or it's just like this other slow-moving ride at Disney World. Nay, nay. It was not. So, yeah, that's where I don't do roller coasters because of Blazing Fury.
All started there.
All started there at the very beginning. All right. Well, I do feel like there's a couple other things we want to save for the bonus episode, some of our additional critiques. So again, make sure you're following along on the Patreon or if we post the recording over to the other platforms, they can pay for it individually on Spotify and Apple. Correct, my producer?
They can pay for the bonus episode?
Just for that one bonus episode. Or is it easier for them just to do their Patreon?
I have not explored that option. Producer can look into that.
It'll be mostly available on the Patreon.
We're going to lean towards Patreon, though, first. Okay. And then if it can go elsewhere, I'll see what I can do.
Okay. Yes. So we'll have some of our critiques and how we think we can plus and go from good to better and best over at the over at Dollywood. But overall, I had a fun time. I got everything I wanted out of it. I had my full Dolly experience. I got my merch. I'm happy. And I'll be singing Hard Candy Christmas as I continue out into my holiday season right now.
We had a good time. I want to stress that too.
We had a good time.
We enjoyed going there. I think that we are a Disney family. We like Disney a lot. Disney ranks much higher than Dollywood for me. If someone was like, hey, Ian, we're going here. We're kidnapping you. It's a free pass to Dollywood Day. We're going. I'd be like, okay, fine. We'll have a good time. Not the end of the world. Safe, clean spot. to enjoy. If you were like Ian, you can choose 3 days at Dollywood or 3 days at any Disney park. I would choose Disney hands down. Any Disney park I would take over Dollywood. Just so mm-hmm. I don't know. It was an enjoyable experience, but it was definitely not better than Disney. I don't agree with TripAdvisor's ranking system at all for Dollywood. And it's weird to me as someone who works with Europeans that there's like international theme park goers that would be reading that article and thinking, wow, I need to really make a trip to Dollywood instead of Magic Kingdom, which I've heard so much about because it's the number one park.
I think our European friends would be scared once they got here to Pigeon Forge.
I think they'd be very confused. They'd be like, this is America? And be like, well, yes. In a lot of ways, it's Tennessee. This is America. But anyway, so I just think...
So maybe it's the perfect theme park for Europeans. We need to force them to go to Dollywood.
To experience the Southern culture.
Experience... Appalachia.
Amen.
America.
I mean, maybe. Let us know in the comments what you think, or also send us your reviews.
And if you take them to Disney, I think there's a couple things that are required viewing at Disney World for Europeans. The American Adventure.
Yes.
Of course. Hall of Presidents. Mm.
Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm.
Great moments with Mr. Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Disneyland.
Mm-hmm,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a couple things. Yeah, I think those are my three requirements for Europeans visiting. If you want to understand America and why we're so much better than everybody else, check those out.
Anyway. So make sure you are following along on all the socials. Again, it's the Dapper Danielle on Instagram, TikTok, Threads, here on YouTube. Or make sure you're also liking and subscribing. Leave those comments, leave those stars wherever you're listening to. We really, really appreciate it, so that way other people can find the Dapper Danielle Show as well. Thank you so much, Clarence and Ian, for being on this episode with us. More cool things to come. We are already working, now that we're in the middle of November, we're going to be in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. So we're going to be covering that also here in the next 2 weeks.
Are
so
we allowed to share our assignment?
We do know we are going to be with the soccer ball.
Soccer.
The football. The football. Soccer ball.
Yeah.
It's soccer.
It's soccer.
We're in America.
Anyway, we're going to be balloon holders for the soccer ball. We don't know where that is exactly yet in the parade route. So maybe if we have more information, I'll be able to share that also on the socials. So more to come. And what else do we need to talk about? Oh, the other thing is that we are already working on the next book release, the I Love Epcot. We are working on the release, and the first signings are coming up for that too. And that's going to be in the beginning of January. So as we get through the holiday season, more info to come towards the end of December into the beginning of January for that too. All right. Anything else to add?
That is all I got.
That is it. All right. Well, thank you so much for watching here until the end of the episode. Again, make sure you're going and checking out the Patreon for that bonus content. And until next time, night-night, sleep tight, dream of churros tonight.